Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Drexel.
And I'm Devin. And today on the pod, we are going to be talking about the second government shutdown.
A blink.
And the immigration reform that didn't happen. Well, first, Drexel.
Yes, ma'am.
How was your weekend?
My weekend was great. For those that don't know, I manage special events. And I oversee multicultural and diversity events for Macy's. And so this weekend we kicked off Black History Month. It was the first in the nation.
Awesome.
I had the first event of the company.
Wow.
And Issa Rae joined us at Macy's Baldwin Hills. Issa Rae from HBO's Insecure. And it was a great, really, really great event. LA Times did a really great write-up on it. And Us Weekly was there and 2fab.com was there. So it was my first national event with the company. So, or at least nationally with national media. So, that was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, you also did, an award show.
I did.
For Young Democrats.
I did. I sit on the board for the San Fernando Valley Young Democrats, here in Los Angeles. And I am the RFK co-chair, RFK, Robert F. Kennedy co-chair. And so it was my job to put together this year's awards ceremony. and they were like, you're an event planner. Why don't you, event plan? And I was like, great, I'll do that. And so, Chairman Bauman, Eric Bauman, who's the chairman of the California Democratic Party, was there. Kevin DeLeon showed up, who is running against Dianne Feinstein for U.S. Senate. He was great. Actually, it was so funny because they told me ahead of time, they were like, he's not going to say anything. Just, give him a shout out if you can from the stage. So I'm standing up there because I was emceeing as well because they're like, well, you also host things. Can you also host the show? I was like, sure. And so I was doing double duty. And Kevin starts walking towards the stage because I thought he was going towards Laura Friedman, Assemblywoman Laura Friedman, who we were honoring that night. And he started walking towards her and then made a beeline towards the stage. No, I didn't get any sort of like cue from him. Like he was walking. Then he started walking up and I was like, oh. He's walking up. Yep. So then I just started walking down.
And, I guess
I'm
going to
do it. Yeah, it was my cue. But it was really great. It was one of the largest attended RFK awards.
That's
awesome. And we raised over $24,000.
Wow.
And we do a lot of putting that money back into candidates that we really believe in and a lot of helping young Democrats, kind of launch their own thing.
Right.
So like, not only that, but like we have convention in a couple of weeks in San Diego, and for the California Democratic Party, and we reimburse young Democrats who are delegates to the party, like myself. And so we give money, up to a certain amount of money for their expenses.
That's great.
So it's a lot of fun.
That's really great.
Yeah. What'd you do this weekend?
Nothing. I actually had a very relaxed weekend, which was nice. I did deadlift my personal best. At
nice.
The gym, 155 pounds.
I cannot deadlift, but
yeah,
I'm
was,
so impressed.
It was intense. And I planned all these events and had celebrities and all this.
No.
I deadlifted 155.
Yeah, but I'm glad it's over.
Yeah, right.
You had an accomplishment. I had work.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I had a really relaxed weekend, which was really nice. I don't get a ton of those.
All right, Devin, let's get into some listener feedback from last week.
Yes. So we got a lot of responses to our call for donations to Planned Parenthood.
That's amazing. You guys are amazing.
It really, so amazing. So we had said if you donate $50. And then on Twitter, I dropped that to $25 because I realized that $50 is a lot and probably out of reach. So I dropped it to $25 to Planned Parenthood. And if you send us your receipt, you get a Valentine from Hellbent Headquarters.
Nice.
Taking a page out of Lauren Duca's book, who came up with the concept. So Drex and I will be sending out cards tonight and tomorrow. So there is still time to donate. And if you send us that receipt, then you'll get a personal Valentine from your favorite feminists.
My funny Valentine.
Exactly. And I'm hand drawing all the cards. So.
And I'm so excited to see what they look like. Because if I started drawing those, you guys would get nothing but stick figures. You'd be like, what? What is this?
Why?
Do not let him draw anything.
Yeah. So it's been super successful. And again, I'm just blown away.
Yeah.
We've raised a lot, like several hundred dollars for
that's amazing
for Planned Parenthood.
And on top of that, I just want to shout out the folks that that jumped in on that conversation we had last week, just about pro-abortion and pro-choice. You know, really great conversation. So continue to have those conversations, because if we don't, then people just won't understand.
Exactly, exactly. And so finally, I'm in the process of updating our website. I think I mentioned this last week or the week before. So it finally got a makeover, and I added Drexel and Varsha.
You can see my little mug.
Yeah. And I'm sorting out the mess that is our merch section. So hopefully that will come together sometime soon. And if you like the show, please rate us 5 stars and subscribe on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. And as I've said before, it complies with Section 3, Article J of the Rules of Feminism.
That's right. Page 25.
Okay, Drexel, so first we're going to talk about this mini government shutdown.
It happened so I didn't even know it was happening. I got a notification on my phone.
Yeah.
And then I got another notification, so I didn't know if it was over. And right. Like, this weekend was very confusing.
It was very confusing. And I was at the gym for 45 minutes. I checked my phone. And they're like, the government has shut down. And I'm like, listen, world.
Stop playing games.
Yeah, figure it the fuck out. Right. Let me know. So can you tell us kind of what happened?
Sure. So, you know, Rand Paul, the living embodiment of your racist Republican uncle who totally has proof that global warming is a hoax, took it upon himself to fuck over the federal government late Friday night. I used to think that Rand Paul was somewhat sane.
Well, the thing about Rand Paul is that he breaks from his caucus.
You just don't know what kind of break it's going to be.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, he was holding out on repealing Obamacare because he didn't think that the legislation they were proposing went far enough.
Right.
So he was against repealing Obamacare, but it wasn't because he believes in Obamacare.
Right.
So he breaks from his caucus that way, but it's unpredictable.
And then he was working with Cory Booker on justice reform.
Right.
And yeah, so like sometimes I just don't know what you're going to get with Rand Paul. But he decided that the GOP, as usual, are a bunch of hypocrites. And that's, he's probably right.
Right. Like, I'm with him far. Like, he started the speech.
He starts to say stuff and then he turns right.
Right.
Right. He was saying that adding to the federal debt after the GOP, hemming and hawing over wasteful spending is an exercise in doublespeak.
Yes.
Which is right.
Right.
I mean, there was an article that came out this weekend about how they've just kind of given up.
Right.
I think it was in the Washington Post where Republicans have kind of given up on this fiscal, and I posted it on Facebook, where Republicans are not the party of fiscal responsibility anymore.
Right. It's very interesting because they're not the party of fiscal responsibility for very interesting reasons.
Right.
So, I mean, again, I'm kind of still with him.
Right.
Know, with him here, but then
he tried to pull a Nancy Pelosi this weekend.
Right.
But she did it better. He gave a lengthy temper tantrum on the floor of the Senate, delaying a vote on the final spending bill. The government ran out of money, as they do, went through a process of shutting itself down. The day before, and I think that you and I were texting, the day before the White House had already prepped their federal agencies
to shut down.
So
yeah, Trump kept saying that he wants a shutdown.
He wants a shutdown because he doesn't want to do the job.
Well, and
Donald Trump's reason for shutdown are very different than any normal president would be. He does not care about his federal employees. So for somebody to say, I want the government to shut down, that just goes to show that he does not care about the people that work for him, which is something that we have talked about throughout this entire campaign.
Right. Well, actually, it was Eric Holderman who was on, I think it was Matt.
Eric Holder?
Yes, sorry. I'm not being Schneiderman.
Holderman.
Sorry, y'all. So Eric Holder, thank you, was on Maddow, and he was saying that the worst day he ever had on the job was when the federal government shut down when Obama was president, and he had to tell his people that they were going to be furloughed.
Right.
And that they could be working in private practices and making a ton of money, but they were at the federal government making peanuts. And then he had to go ahead and say, well, we can no longer pay you peanuts, and we don't even know if your job will be here when you get back.
Right.
And so the fact that Trump wants a shutdown for no apparent reason, besides, like you said, he doesn't want to do the job, I also have a theory. He wants chaos.
Right. He wants to blame the Democrats.
Yeah. And he wants a distraction. Think about it. Government shutdowns dominate the news cycle. Even in this banana-na-na's news cycle, government shutdowns still rise to the top. So everything else that he's doing gets second billing.
Right.
So I really believe, especially with all the stuff about Mueller, which hasn't gotten a lot of press lately, and...
Which I'm kind of glad about. The right. more we don't hear about it, the more Robert Mueller can do the fuck his job.
Exactly. But so I think that removing that from the narrative, though, is really important to Trump. And so saying something like, I want there to be a government shutdown, just stirs up this chaos and forces us to focus on it.
But if you also remember, at the same time that he was saying that on Thursday, Mike Pence wasn't getting great press in North Korea, in Pyeongchang.
Right.
So, and he was getting upstaged by Kim Jong-un's sister.
Right, right.
Who was like, I was reading an article yesterday, they call her the Ivanka Trump of North Korea.
Right.
I guess?
Yeah.
Great. I don't know who that's good for, Ivanka or her. I don't know.
Don't know.
And, but like he just he wasn't getting great press because he was the only dignitary that didn't stand for any other country. It was right. just bad. It was right. bad all around. And then Adam Rippon and Gus Kinsworthy. I mean, they're just making headway,
right.
just bashing him at every turn they yeah. get. So I'm sure that's another reason why, Donald Trump wanted to do that. And then there was an interview that Mike Pence had done where one of the reporters asked him, why are you always out of the loop, basically?
Yes.
So, like, that's another reason why he wasn't getting great press.
Right.
So,
although I believe that it's because he is in the loop and just lies to the press about it more effectively.
My theory is that he told them he never wants to know.
Right.
So that he has complete plausible deniability.
Right, right. Just la 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 la.
Yep,
la
don't
la,
tell me. If there's anything bad that comes out of Donald Trump, don't. I don't want to know.
I don't want to know. Just literally don't tell me.
Tell mother. She'll let me know if I need to know.
Oh, it's so creepy. It's still so creepy. So this spending bill that ultimately did pass and got signed by Trump. And I wasn't sure. It's a 2-year spending bill, correct?
Right.
Right. So it is full of surprise turds, let me tell you, but it does not address immigration reform or present a DACA fix.
But
we knew that?
We knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes we can put Democrats up on a pedestal that they don't have.
Right.
You know, like being in the minority. You're in the minority for a reason.
Right.
And you don't have any power.
Right.
In this case, Nancy Pelosi, you know, and she said it this weekend. I was reading an article this weekend about how she, you know, has to, you know, navigate these minefields with different Democrats. But there were Democrats that didn't want to shut down the government over immigration. There were Democrats that did want to shut down the government over immigration. There were she's trying to navigate 2018. She's trying to make sure that people can still get reelected. And so, yeah, and she is, from both sides of the aisle, the most brilliant legislator ever.
Right.
And so, yeah, we got to look at Nancy Pelosi and be like, you do you, girl.
Yeah.
But the problem is she needs backup.
Right.
So we're not, you know, Steny Hoyer, all those guys, they need to be out there being like, the leader's doing what she needs to do.
Right. Well, because they're coming after her saying she didn't work hard enough to whip the votes.
Right. So Louis Guta, somebody said this, or Tim Ryan, who ran against her for leader last time, said, well, you can strip Democrats of their committee. You know, there are different ways. You can strip Democrats of their committee assignments. Why would you do that?
Right.
You're the leader of their party.
Why would you do
they
that?
Need to be able to respect you. That you don't need to blackmail them.
Yeah, you don't need to rule in fear.
Right. That's
to get work done.
You're not a Republican.
Right.
You know,
and
so.
She's already proven herself to be a brilliant legislator.
Right.
And so the choices that she makes, I have faith in the choices that she makes.
Right.
You know, she is not Paul Ryan. Like,
she has a backbone.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, she is not just some mouthpiece. Like, she actually has a plan, and I believe that. So, I'm not surprised that it didn't address immigration reform or present a DACA fix, and I'm not even saying that it should have. My issue here, though, is that McConnell, to my absolute surprise and delight, is actually setting debate on a DACA fix and immigration reform.
Yes.
I mean, presented shell legislation, which I didn't know what it was. I had to look it up. Shell legislation is a basically an empty bill And everyone proposes and votes on amendments to that bill. Mm-hmm. So there's no pre sort of written...
No pre-existing conditions.
Pre-existing conditions, right? Yes, no pre-existing conditions. And then you add the amendments, and the ones that get 60 votes are in, which is a strategy. It's kind of a rare strategy.
Yeah, I think that it's... I like that way of governing, especially with the way that the Senate rules are made up.
Right.
Because it does allow the minority to have a say, even though there's only eight, even though they only need so many. The problem that I have with the debate, quote unquote, portion of it is that that does not necessarily mean that it's going to pass the Senate.
Right, right.
We can talk about it all we want to, but that doesn't necessarily mean it passes the Senate.
And that was my problem with the first shutdown, is that all McConnell agreed to was debate.
Right.
He didn't agree to actually pass legislation.
And if you remember what I said I needed to hear dates.
Right. And also, even if McConnell somehow pulls through on this, I love to be right. I wish I was not for this, but I don't. Paul Ryan made no such assurances.
Right. And I think that's why people were surprised that Democrats voted for the spending bill, because people felt that they had the leverage.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the House Freedom Caucus, yeah, I think they had a block of like 20 or 30.
Yeah.
But do you have enough I don't like to use the word conservative Democrats, but do you have enough centrist Democrats who are in tight races,
right,
who are looking and saying, I don't have a choice,
right,
but to vote for something that my constituents are expecting me to vote for? And I think that that's one of the things that we have to that I always tell people is just like, look, your personal legislature, like, you put the pressure on your legislatures, and if here in California, obviously a more liberal state than say a Claire McCaskill in Missouri, are getting two different sets of phone calls,
right?
So we have to remember that going in, so we cannot be so hardline on these Democrats who are voting. They're voting the way that their people are asking them to vote.
Right, right. Which is the point of democracy. It's
right.
Just,
you think. No shit.
it is just hard, because I feel like Democrats are just going to end up with egg on their faces, because they put on this whole government shutdown saying that they wanted debate and an immigration reform passed. And then I think they're going to get played here.
I think that the alternative to that is to always be two steps ahead of Republicans in the press.
Right.
It can, we talk about, I feel like we could literally have a whole segment on Democratic messaging.
Yeah.
Every week being like, well, this was shitty. They could have done this better. But every step of the way, every time somebody says something, the Democrats should be out on the step somewhere. Democrats should be out in front of somewhere.
Right. Well, what's interesting is because Ryan did say that the House, quote, will bring a solution to the floor, one that the president will sign. And I feel like that's kind of a wishy-washy bullshit way to say
to not be responsible.
Right, because what Trump actually wants is a goddamn mystery.
Right.
Even to himself.
So send him whatever. Donald Trump will sign whatever will make him look good.
Exactly.
So this idea that they're taking, I really wish that, okay, so when Ronald Reagan, you remember when Ronald Reagan had Tip O'Neill as the relationship between Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan wasn't great. Like, we need to get back to that time.
Right.
We need to get back to the time where a Democratic speaker, obviously, and a Republican president kind of work together a little bit.
Right.
Because it will always make everybody look good, and the American people can make a decision on who's better at governing on their own.
Right.
We also need to get rid of the Hassert rule. So we need to go back to the time where Speaker Hassert, who was Speaker of the House when President Bush was president, would only if a majority of his caucus signed on to it, that's the only time that bill would go on the floor.
Interesting.
So that is the rule that Republicans have continued under Paul Ryan.
So they will only put legislation on that the entire majority of the Republican caucus has signed off on.
Correct. Which, if you think about it, say Paul Ryan put an immigration bill on the floor right now.
Right.
It would get a significant amount of Republicans, and they only need 20.
Right.
Or 30, whatever.
Right.
Democrats would all sign on to it, and it would pass the House.
Right. But Ryan can't or won't put that up
because
without
he is continuing the Hassert
rule. Got
it. So that's something that people they're like, why is the House not working the way that it's supposed to be? It's because the Hassert rule is in place.
Well, but it's not like a hard and fast rule. It's just a norm. It's just something that Ryan is continuing, right?
Correct.
So... So that's the Democratic norm that they're choosing to adhere to.
Correct.
Cool.
I mean, in theory, yeah, that makes sense. You are the majority. You right. want a majority of your people to work out, but that's not how the House was built.
Right. No pun intended. Because then something like the Freedom Caucus could block everything, which right. I'm assuming is what they're doing.
That's exactly how it has worked over the past few years. And that's why nothing could pass under President Obama, even though the Senate would send significant amount of legislation.
Right.
They didn't think that the budget would pass for that reason. So, and then, of course, they went around and tried to blame the Democrats for it. Because I don't think Donald Trump understands the Hassert rule either.
Right. I just don't think that Ryan is going to be putting forth anything on immigration.
Yeah, I don't think so either, and I think that it's going to cost him in, you know, some votes when he's up for re-election. Actually, I read something that he's still thinking about running for re-election. He hasn't made a decision yet.
I don't know. If I were Paul Ryan, I'd probably get the fuck out of Dodge, too.
Well, I don't know. Actually, I would like for Paul Ryan to stay because the Republican running against him is a full-fledged racist,
right.
Paul Nealon, who got his account suspended this weekend because he posted a photo of... Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, like, it was the most vile thing.
Oh, great. And I think not having assurances on immigration reform. I think when you talk about Democratic messaging, that just looks bad, though.
Right.
I think that the whole point of the Democrats holding up the first spending bill, I don't even know where, like, Rand Paul fits into this, to be perfectly honest. Like, he's holding up the spending bill for completely different reasons.
Right.
Oh, that's almost like a red herring.
Rand Paul's holding it up for... conservative principles.
Like, he's holding it up for Rand Paul.
In Rand Paul's head,
right.
Conservative principles.
Right.
Right.
And it almost feels like a red herring because the conversation has completely strayed away from the original purpose of shutting down the government the first time, which was to get a bill on immigration reform and a DACA fix. Because
right.
March 5th is like in 2 minutes.
Right.
And March 5th is when the DACA program expires and up to 900 DACA recipients will be eligible for deportation.
And
900 a day, excuse me, 900 DACA recipients a day will lose protections from deportation.
And the White House, even though you can't believe a word they say, has continued to say, obviously, Dreamers will not be the priority. General Mattis, Secretary of Defense, has gone as far as to say that to Congress that basically, anybody who's in the military will be protected and their
right.
families. So that's a break from this White House.
Right. Well, there's something Schumer said right after the first government shutdown. And then they voted on the stopgap spending bill. And he went on Rachel Maddow and said something that really bothered me. And I've been thinking a lot about it. He said, quote, "But if we pass it in the Senate," so it being immigration reform, "with a bipartisan vote, we have a good chance to put pressure on the House to do it, particularly if they don't do it by March 5th. The awful, awful, awful pictures of Dreamers being deported, I think will rally the nation and the House will be forced to do it." So I get what Chuck Schumer's saying. He's saying that the House is going to have to cave. And especially if the Senate puts forth a piece of legislation that passed with, you know, bipartisan support, mm-hmm. and the House is basically going to be shamed into doing it. But this idea of these pictures of Dreamers being deported spurring the House into action.
Yeah, that's not gonna work.
I mean, this, first of all, I don't know that it would work.
No.
I don't think that at this point, I'm pretty sure soulless Paul Ryan doesn't care.
No.
And this is also the idea of collateral damage and this idea that war of any kind comes with human cost and that the sacrifice of the few to benefit the many is worth it. And I hate that this logic has been applied to DACA recipients. So these were kids, basically. They weren't all kids, but mostly kids who were told that if they handed their personal information over to the government, they would be protected. And they're now being held over the fire and used as potential leverage, basically to produce bad optics. And that we're just really letting those people down by using them as bait. I mean, Schumer's kids aren't on the line.
Right.
They're not going to get deported.
I'm actually really surprised. The Obama administration was very good at putting in place certain rules to make it hard for Republicans to dismantle certain things. That's why it's so hard to dismantle the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
So I'm really surprised that they did not put the same protections around this. Right. Obviously, I'm sure it was because they thought that a Democrat would succeed Barack Obama.
Right.
But I'm surprised that, you know, on the way out the door, they didn't like,
Lock it down. Like, throw away the key.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Because, yes, pictures of people who are American citizens in every way except on paper being deported will probably play badly in the press. And it could result in the House being shamed into voting on a DACA fix and an immigration bill. But it also ends with these American in every way except on paper citizens being deported.
Right.
And I don't really want my leadership telling me that other people's kids are the bait set because lawmakers can't come to some sort of agreement on this.
Right. And again, that's just bad messaging. And I think that the message should always be, you know, we got to put the pressure on your legislator, and then you got to get out and vote, and, you know, we got to do what we can to make sure that everybody's protected as much as possible. But, you know, again, that's what comes with being in the minority, and I think it's going to be a really tough fight because I don't know that there is going to be a fix by March 5th.
Oh, no.
I mean, there's no way.
There's no way.
I'd be shocked, actually. All right, Devin, I texted you this weekend and I said, I still don't even know what's going on. I have not been paying attention, it just had a busy weekend. And I had not been paying attention to what's been happening or what's been coming up. So what is going on today?
Today. So the Trump administration unveiled an infrastructure plan. So
it's not infrastructure week? Is it?
It is infrastructure
for week. For the 15th time?
Yes,
for the 15th time. Yes, great. I'm so excited.
It is infrastructure week. Here's the thing. I wanted to put this in the show because this is something that Trump talked about on the campaign trail a lot. Mm-hmm. He was obsessed with this idea of infrastructure and rebuilding America and making America great, creating jobs.
If you build it, they will come.
Right. These infrastructure programs. And during the campaign, he threw out this number. I think it was $1.5 trillion. He loved that number. He kept throwing it out. So he unveiled an infrastructure plan that he says is a $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan. But Drexel, do you think it is? Actually,
It is not. Actually, there was more of an unveiling of the Obama portraits today than there was of this non-plan.
It's a good portrait.
It was so good.
So good. I would hang that in my house.
I mean, it's not the official White House portrait, but the garden behind
it's so good.
President Obama was so great. And then Michelle just, you know, she just looked amazing.
I know. It's lovely. Anyway, so this plan basically calls for investing $200 billion in federal money over the next 10 years to basically entice other levels of government and the private sector to raise their spending on infrastructure by more than $1 trillion to hit that goal of $1.5 trillion.
So basically what the idea is for here in Los Angeles, right, for Mayor Garcetti to say, hey, I'm going to put in X amount of money.
Right.
And the government will then match that to help pay for their infrastructure projects.
Well, what's interesting is that a big part of this infrastructure bill is centered around private sector investment.
Which we talked about it a few weeks ago. And yes. I know that somebody commented in the Dickwad group just about how the private sector versus public sector things can be, so you walk a fine line.
Right.
And whether or not we like public sector being in infrastructure projects,
right,
or public infrastructure projects.
I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing.
Right. I don't either.
I just don't think that hinging the entire infrastructure plan on the private sector is a good idea. The White House is suggesting that lawmakers cut money from elsewhere in the budget, including some existing infrastructure programs, to pay for this infrastructure program. I wish you could see Drexel's face right now. It is good.
They're not that bright.
I mean, they...
So hold on. Here's the crazy thing about this
whole
thing. He wanted a $1.5 trillion... infrastructure package after cutting $1.5 trillion in taxes.
Yeah.
I'm no economist.
You don't even play one on TV.
I come from the Jed Bartlett School of Economics, where whatever Jed Bartlett has said on the West Wing, that's all I know.
That's fair.
But as far as I understand, what you're at net zero.
You're at like net negative $1.5 trillion.
Where's that money coming from?
Right. And then they propose to cut money from current infrastructure.
So you're cutting more. Okay.
I mean,
not only that, but safety net programs as well.
Right.
Which they just passed a budget where they put money into better programs.
Right. And let's not forget.
So you're going to cut the programs
that you just put money into. Right.
Got
it. And let's not forget that back in the tax bill that passed, that there are sort of these clauses that, you know, expire. And there are these little hidden gems in there that say if we can't meet our revenue goals, we will cut from social welfare programs.
They're going to seek. It's going to be sequestration across the board.
Seriously.
Not even the Defense Department.
Exactly. Infrastructure is often touted as a way to create jobs as well.
Which, yes,
it definitely does. But I would also like to point out that the jobs that infrastructure programs create are overwhelmingly not given to women and people of color.
Right.
You know, these contracts are, especially when you're involving the private sector in these huge contracts, we're talking about, you know, giving the top corporations more money. So in addition to this tax cut that they've put up, the private industry that they're trying to attract to give these lucrative contracts to is also just adding to the top 1%.
Right. And I think this is somewhere where Democrats probably can come in and say, okay, great, here's what we'll do. We will work on this infrastructure plan with you if we can require that we have X amount of union jobs, we have X amount of women workers, we have X amount of people of color. Like, I don't like this. It's kind of like filling quotas.
Right.
But the only way to make sure that it is fair across the board is to lay out markers.
Right.
And say, here are your guidelines.
Right.
For us giving you this money, and you need to meet those guidelines. And so I think that Democrats have to say, we're going to stick by the unions and our people and all Americans and say, here's how we're going to do it.
So Chad Bolt, who's the senior policy advisor for the Indivisible Group, he had a really great thread on this document. So it was released this morning. He kind of went through it point by point. So I'm going to read the whole thing, and it's kind of long, but it is very informative. And I am also from the Jed Bartlett School of Economics. So,
nice.
It's much clearer when he says it. So he says, quote, Trump's infrastructure plan is out, released on the same day as his proposed budget later this morning. First thing to know, it is not a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. It is a $200 billion in federal spending offset by cuts to other programs, including existing infrastructure programs. To underscore the previous point, the key word here is stimulate. Trump expects $200 billion in federal spending, offset by these program cuts, to generate the other $850 billion. That is an absurd assumption, and there's nothing to back it up. The first section details $100 billion of an incentives program. It explicitly states that a grant from this bucket can be no more than 20% of funding for a project, underscoring that this is not real federal investment of the magnitude that is required. The next section says it makes a significant investment in rural infrastructure, but limits this bucket of funding to $50 billion. It encourages, quote, private investment, but it's hard to imagine what legit private interest would see in upgrading a rural sewer system as a profitable venture. Re-transformative projects. They're mega projects most attractive to private investment and most likely to carry high user fees. AKA, Trump wants to cut some existing federal programs, give money to private investors to help build the mega project, then charge you again to use it, like with tolls. More insanity. On the day Trump releases his infrastructure scam, his proposed fiscal year 19 budget would eliminate federal transportation grants. I'm not making this up. His budget says, we're going to take existing federal transportation money, cut it down, then repackage it as a shiny new infrastructure plan that hopefully gets your state government to raise taxes on you in order to raise the rest of the money we're not going to give them. To be clear, eliminating Tiger grants, which are transportation grants, is a $500 million cut to infrastructure on a day Trump wants us to think he is serious about infrastructure. Demand for Tiger grants, the transportation grants, is so high that only about 5% of applicants are rewarded funding.
It's a scam.
It's a total scam.
But we're not surprised. I think that, you know, as Maya Angelou says, when people show you who they are, believe them. And so everything that Donald Trump has done has been to scam people out of money. So I don't know why people would see this infrastructure scam plan any differently.
Yeah, I just don't understand how he can get away with repackaging more cuts.
You know how?
As a stimulus package. How?
Because Democrats aren't saying exactly what the Chad Bolt said.
Right.
that's how. The fact that we're not cutting ads with exactly that.
Right.
I mean, with you reading it on the air.
Right.
Like that's where I think in this world, and this time, those are the type of ads we need to be cutting.
Right.
Like this is exactly what they said.
Right.
Instead of us doing voiceovers of in the hills of, you know, purple waves of grain, I approve this message, like that kind of shit. Those days are over.
Nobody cares.
Those days are over. We need to be out there saying, this is a scam.
Right.
Here's the reality of the situation.
Right.
And it might shock the shit out of people, but I think people would appreciate a little truthery. It's my George W. Bush. Get a little truthery.
A little truthery.
I think that's where what we need to be in a world of alternative facts.
Right.
Democrats have to be the voice of truth.
Absolutely. And actually, Oregon Rep. Peter DeFazio actually made a really great point as well. He said, quote, this is not a real infrastructure plan. It is simply another scam, an attempt by this administration to privatize critical government functions and create windfalls for their buddies on Wall Street. But Hillary is the Wall Street shill, of course. Yeah. He continues, quote, this fake proposal will not address the serious infrastructure needs facing this country. So our potholed roads will get worse. Our bridges and transit systems will become more dangerous and our tolls will become higher because, again, investors who want to work on these public projects want to return on their money, which means tolls.
Right. And I think one of the other things that we talked earlier just about Donald Trump creating a little bit of chaos. So today is Monday. We're recording on a Monday. Today, we've got the Obama unveiling of the portrait. We're in the middle of the Olympics. Donald Trump also, in addition to the infrastructure plan, also sent out the White House's budget requests in the same day. So he's got two competing plans going out there so that the news cannot focus on one of them.
Right.
So we need to be looking at very carefully those two proposals that just came out today, even though we'd much rather look at Obama's flowery portrait. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that, you know, I always challenge people out there. If you're paying attention, like I obviously love being listened to all the time, but crack open, you know, get a subscription to the New York Times, yep, or get a subscription to the Washington Post, and listen to NPR and just, you know, take as much information in so that you will not be shocked.
Well, I think that education is a feminist act.
Right.
And arming yourself with knowledge and information. I've said it before. I will say it again. I will say it until I'm blue in the face. In the age of information, control of the narrative is the weapon.
And Republicans know how to do it better.
Okay, Drexel. So the infrastructure plan is going to haunt me.
The infrastructure scam.
Scam is going to haunt me for the next couple of days. But let's bring it up a little bit. So what are you grateful for today?
Well, as you know, it's Black History Month.
Yes.
And I, like I said, I had a really great event this weekend. And Issa Rae, who I had never met, she's super sweet. And her team could not have been better. You know, I'm just grateful for her message. You know, I think that she embodies both two things that, you know, one thing that we do here on Hellbent, which is that feminist aspect of it. She, you know, she is an advocate for women, and she is also an advocate for Black people,
right,
especially Black women.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, she talked a lot this weekend about, you know, her career and things that she would not have been able to do, and the audience that was out there listening to that. I mean, I think that I talked to a lot of people after the event, and then they were like, it was just great,
right,
for them to hear the message that she's, you know, having that access and doing that. So, you know, my gratitude is of course to Issa for,
yeah,
coming out and spreading more of that message out there.
Well, and so the first guest ever on Hellbent was a writer named Sarah Kuhn.
Nice.
And she is an Asian American woman who writes stories about Asian American women that have nothing to do with them being Asian American. They're just stories. Mm-hmm. You know, her big series is called the Heroine series, and it's just about these superheroes that happen to be Asian American. And she said something really interesting. She said that people of color stories being told in a joyful way that has nothing to do with their race is an act of resistance. And I feel like Issa Rae, especially with Insecure, really embodies that. Is that it's
just life.
It's just life. It's just her life.
Right.
And it's just it's creating a wider net of representation.
Yeah, and I think that can sometimes be a double-edged sword. Like, you want people to understand the struggle that people of color go through, while at the same time trying to normalize things. And I don't, I won't limit that to people of color, women, LGBTQ, you know, everybody,
right,
that has struggled along the way has a story that needs to be told so that we can get to a normal place, but we are not under normal time. Like under President Obama, everybody felt some semblance of normalcy.
Right.
And that there was progress being made and that we would get to a certain point. But now we're having to head back just a little bit, remind people why human decency is a thing.
Right.
And tell those stories.
Yeah.
What about you, Devin?
Well, I am grateful for a figure skater. You might have heard of her this week. Her name is Mari Nagasu. And I was a competitive figure skater when I was a kid.
Nice.
And figure skating is the only Olympic event that I am even remotely interested in.
I cannot figure it. I tried to ice skate one day. And nothing.
And she is the first American woman and only the third woman ever to land a triple axel. So in skating, So in skating, there are six jumps recognized in competition, and a triple axel is unique because you launch from the front, which means you have to do an additional half rotation. So you do 3.5 rotations, and it is considered the most difficult of all the jumps.
I watched it. I watched a clip on it, and I was like, she's spinning.
Right.
And then Adam Rippon had a really great reaction to that.
Like, what? Holy cow.
And so, yeah, I thought it was great. So yeah. Kudos to her.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was just amazing to watch. It was so cool. She landed it beautifully.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not a huge sports fan, and right. I'm not a huge Olympics fan, but I love me some figure skating. Uh-huh. And it was just amazing to watch. And that jump is what helped America win the bronze in women's skating.
Yeah.
Without that jump, we wouldn't have.
And I think Adam's teams are the men the won the bronze mm-hmm. as well. I think Canada had the first gold. Openly gay figure skater leading that pack too. So, you know, we're just knocking it out.
We're just knocking it out.
Women and gays. The real people who should be running the world, really. I mean, let's be real. That's what's happening here on this podcast right now. Yeah. we're just in it.
Right.
We're leading the pack.
We're leading the pack.
We're leading the pack. All right, Devin, you know what it's time for.
It's my favorite.
It's time for Dick Wad of the Week.
It's still the best part of the show when you say Dick Wad of the Week. Okay, so this week we have an official loser, and that loser is John Kelly.
Official.
Official loser.
We have the official loser.
We have a bonus round loser, right. too, but the official loser is John Kelly for so many reasons. I don't even know where to start. I could just start with the fact that he's a sleeper racist, sleeper misogynist that nobody pays enough attention to, which I've said before and will say again. But this story in particular really set him above the edge. So obviously there was the whole debacle with Rob Porter and the other guy. What was his name? Who just left the White House amid domestic violence?
Again, a situation where I just heard Rob Porter and another White House person. Like, I had no idea. He was a speechwriter. Yeah. So I was like...
Ed Kelly obviously knew about that, and he defended Rob Porter and said he was a great guy. And that was a whole mess. But this story is what put me over the edge for this week. So Kelly described immigrants who were eligible to apply for DACA and work permits were... lazy because they didn't apply for their DACA permits in time. He said, Kelly told reporters Tuesday morning, so last Tuesday, he said this in real life. He said, quote, people that some would say were too afraid to sign up, others would say they were too lazy to get off their asses.
Yeah, but this is consistent with, being a Marine Corps kid, John Kelly was active duty Marine when my dad was active duty. So it is shocking to hear somebody of a general status, a four-star general, to say things like that.
Right.
So I always get a little confused. But it's consistent with how he ran the Department of Homeland Security.
Right.
And his views there.
Right.
So part of me also believes that... if you're in the White House, you serve at the pleasure of the president. So your rhetoric has to protect the president.
Right.
And whether or not, so you can either resign and stick to your convictions of being a decent human being, or you can continue on protecting the president because you want to keep your job for some reason.
Well, I guess I understand that to some extent, but I feel like this kind of comment isn't just protecting the president's rhetoric. Like, we're into territory where he said ass and lazy.
Right. But I'm saying this is consistent with how Donald Trump talks.
Right.
So this is not...
But how would if I were a four-star general, which I will never be, so I have no idea. I'm talking out my butt. could be.
We're bestowing upon you 3 stars for now.
3 stars for now.
And we'll get to the 4 stars soon.
But I feel like no matter what my views were, no matter... the president under which I served, no matter what they said, I would never, ever sink to that level.
I understand that piece of it. I feel like he's trying to talk as like a Marine would talk.
Right.
And Marines do military. Needless.
Swear like a sailor.
Yeah. 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 You know what I mean? And so I think that he's reverted back to that a little bit.
Right.
And I don't want anybody thinking that I'm defending it. I'm just saying, like, this is where I believe his mindset is that he is a Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. But at the same time, they've got a whole constituency,
right,
that loves this plain talk, hard line speak. I mean, I mentioned Paul Nealon earlier today. He actually posted on Facebook a political cartoon of a DACA recipients in or dreamers in catapults, and Paul Ryan crying and all to the side because that's the way that Paul Nealon is, and like DACA recipients being catapulted over the wall. So like, this is the kind of stuff that are between Paul Nealon and I believe there's another person that's running unopposed in the Republican primary. I can't remember his name right now, but he is a full blown like Nazi.
Right.
So like, this is the kind of shit we're up against right now. Right. And like, we need to put these people back in fucking holes.
Right.
The holes. Go that back. They came from. Go back. To where you came from.
Right.
And right, but right now to this White House, those are the people that are keeping them afloat.
Right, right. Well, and Kelly also is saying that Trump is being so nice to DACA recipients and that he's trying to create this framework and that Democrats are the one fucking everything up because they won't get on board with Trump's non-plan for DACA. Right. So Trump doesn't have anything, isn't really offering anything. And John Kelly is fucking gaslighting everyone and saying the Democrats are the ones that aren't getting on board with this, to use Trump's words, big-hearted DACA plan.
But I think that, again, Democrats have to come out with a plan.
Right, right.
So,
But my problem is that Kelly is saying that Trump has a plan. He's referring to a throwaway line in the State of the Union address,
right,
which is not a plan.
Right.
And saying that it's Democrats' fault that they're not getting on board with this plan.
Right. So I think that, again, if Democrats want to change the narrative, they have to go back out there and say, here's our plan.
Right.
Here is what we've been told the president's plan is. And here's how they differ.
Right.
We have to be able to say, present that plan. We can't do what Republicans did for the 7 years and not have an ACA plan.
Right.
We have to say, here is the alternative to that every step of the way.
Right, right.
And that's the only way that things like this from John Kelly can be combated.
Right. Well, and I think for me, what made this such like a disgusting moment, though, was that Kelly, he openly mocks this. You know, he says, he's saying that maybe it was fear, but maybe it was just they're too lazy to get off their asses. And so Kelly is really mocking this fear that a lot of DACA recipients had when DACA was first set up. And a lot of dreamers were like, yeah, I'm not handing over my personal information to the government. That's some bullshit right there.
which is the same fear,
right,
that gun owners,
right,
have.
Right.
So, and again, a situation where I think Democrats can appeal,
right,
to the heart of some conservatives to say, these people have given up something that you are never willing to give up.
Right, right. Which is their personal information.
Right.
And I mean, I'm a big old conspiracy theorist about personal information. I think privacy is a myth, and I have a whole rant about it.
I was driving the other day, and guys, I mean, it may sound like the craziest thing, but I was like, how is it that, like, GPS,
yeah,
is something that is crazy to me.
Well, everyone uses it. It is on your phone.
But like, how do they know?
You can be tracked.
How do they, when the street signs change, who tells them that the street signs,
yeah,
change?
Yeah.
Where does it come from?
Right. And if you think that companies aren't mining that data, I have a bridge to sell you.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. So, but the thing is it's not just fear that stops people from applying to DACA. I mean, it's $495 to apply for DACA, and you have to renew every 2 years for an additional cost of $495. And, you know, other immigrants weren't aware that they were eligible or weren't able to afford a lawyer who could vet their application. And, you know, they could have gotten rejected because their application wasn't airtight. Or I don't understand how we can be okay with the White House chief of staff and four-star general mocking people's fear and inability to apply for a very complicated and expensive process.
Because they never believed in the process to begin with.
Yeah.
And so, and that's the reality of the situation, which is you can, you only mock something that you thought was a joke.
Okay, Drexel, long show. Last but not least, let's do some action items. So something our listeners could do after they listen to the show.
Yes. Well, as we always say, and I said it earlier, get on the phone, call your reps. I actually call, like if we need to book a guest or something like that, I actually just call the office. Like, yeah, they're actually pretty nice.
Yeah.
So you can call, especially on the immigration bill coming up. You know, they need to hear from their areas. Like, I understand the idea of people calling other people's representatives, right, but that's help. Not how it works.
It doesn't help.
So if you know people,
right, tell them
in those states, or if you post on Facebook, hey, if you're in this state, please call X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Just make sure you're getting that information out there, because they need to pass a bipartisan piece of legislation that has definitely been kicking around Congress since dinosaurs roamed the damn earth. If you have a Democratic representative, they need to make sure that they're getting an immigration bill to the floor, especially over the next few weeks. And we're not talking about the Senate, because the Senate's going to be fine.
Yeah, the Senate is...
The House needs some nudging and some pushing.
And also the House is where it's direct representation.
Right.
Right? There's one person for your district. They're broken up into districts. It is direct representation.
You know what might not be a bad idea, too?
Hmm.
Call the mayor's office.
Yes.
Make sure that your mayor...
Also knows.
...is putting the pressure... is making public statements, because a lot of mayors want higher office in it. Like Garcetti's, like he's about to run for president.
Right.
You know, but he was in Runyon Canyon with Justin Trudeau, or Griffith Park with Justin Trudeau the other day. So, you know, he's building that
international.
Which is like the
greatest date of all time.
It was super cute.
Okay.
But like, you know, and those mayors have a platform, right, especially in big cities.
Oh, absolutely.
And they want to protect their dreamers in their cities as well. So definitely do what you can. If you've made those those calls to your representatives, turn a page, go to your mayor's,
yeah,
and have those conversations. Well, and your governor's office.
Right. And this sort of ties into our next action item, which is find out how your city handles immigration. Right. We're talking about immigration reform. We're talking about DACA and dreamers. Find out if your local police work with ICE, if they have protections for undocumented people, and what groups operate with, which groups operate to help those caught up in the system get justice. And then donate to those groups that you find. Call your mayors and your local reps. And I mean, I'm talking about like your council members. Like,
right,
you know, I'm talking like get really local. People who won within elections that had like 4,000 votes cast, because you're one of those 4,000 votes and they're going to fucking listen to you.
Right.
They will. So, and then again, we mentioned at the top of the show, but we're still doing a donation drive for Planned Parenthood. So
yes,
you donate $25 more and you send us a receipt, you get a special Valentine's Day message from me and Drex.
Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day to you,
Thank
Devin.
Thank you.
Happy Valentine's Day to Tim. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's actually Tim's birthday.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. So, you know, give him a little shout out.
Yeah.
You can tweet at me or, you know, say something on social media.
Yeah.
I will, you know, show him and he will
appreciate
that.
Pass it
right along.
Yeah. But. So on this Valentine's Day, find someone you love and tell them to call their reps.
Yes. That is the Valentine's wish of the year.
Actually, I love that. So roses are red, violets are blue. Call your fucking representative.
And they'll love you too.
I love it. We're so good at this. Okay. All right, Drexel. So that is it for us today. You can follow me at Devin Handy, and you can follow Drexel
at Drexel Heard.
Yes. We're very fun on Twitter.
We have some announcements coming up soon.
We do have some really exciting announcements.
I'm really excited about it. So stay tuned. It won't come for a few more weeks, but we got some really cool stuff.
We got some cool stuff. So make sure to follow us and the show at Hellbent Pod. And I will see you back here on Thursday. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye, guys.